Okay, here we go. I see the geniuses are in the booth. that was said with quotation marks around it. No, our staff in the booth there, preparing for yet another podcasting miracle. You ready to go? Levels are set? Good. Okay, write it in the book here. Number 144. 144. When I think of 44, I think of Hank Aaron. Right? And Reggie Jackson of the Yankees later on. Good old 44. All right. Here we go. We ready? Level set? Thumbs up? Okay, cool. Three S's, Jim. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. Let's do this thing. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, new episode posted for your podcasting pleasure. Your bountiful binging. Thank you for scrolling, clicking, and downloading, whatever it is you do, to find us here on a regular basis. Your efforts, your loyalty, and your participation are all much appreciated. This is episode 144. And as I was saying to the crew behind the scenes here, when I think of 44, I think of Hank Aaron, who broke the first to break Babe Ruth's home run record, number 44, and then also, Reggie Jackson took number 44 when he went to the Yankees. There's a couple of famous 44s out there. So hopefully we'll make this 144 just as memorable and historic as those two numbers have been, and that, I guess, that number deserves. Welcome to the podcast. Jim Toronto with you here. So, what I wanted to talk about today, and later on in the show, we will, this will be, we'll post this podcast before the Oscars are handed out on February 24th. So, later in the podcast, in the Pop Culture Club, Emily Arminetti and I will talk about the Oscars, but in a different way. Everybody's going to give you their predictions and yatta-da, and I've already told you that the political side of the Oscars is such that you don't even have to have seen any of the movies, and you can pretty much predict the winners just by reading and getting a vibe on where the popularity and where the voting trends are moving based on stories that are written, based on just the overall kind of media take on things. But we're not going to do that. That's not why you come here. You can go get all that regular stuff everywhere else. The goal of this podcast is to give you some original, creative entertainment and information that you can't get anywhere else. So we're going to take a little different perspective and take on that. But that's later on. But, hey, are we ever that far away from politics? You think so. And sometimes we look for diversions in our everyday life to get away from some of the cold, hard truths of the world and this society that we've created without really much of a game plan, if you think about it. I mean, really, there really is no plan. It's amazing how you know, we have come this far as a civilization, the human race, on this planet without really any game plan. If you listen to me with any kind of regularity, you know that I am one that loves to make lists and loves to execute on those lists. And as I've said many times, there's nothing more satisfying. Well, maybe a few things, but there's nothing in my mind many times. Let's just say, you know, it's very satisfying and fulfilling to when you make that list and then you go out and you act on that list. And when you can put an X mark through each item on that list, and at the end of the day or a month or whatever it is when you're making this list, when you look at it and it's all X marked out, and all those tasks or experience that you wanted to do, you did finish, and hopefully you did in a positive way. There's a great sense of fulfillment and accomplishment. So I love lists. But think about the human condition here, the human race. There's really been no plan here. Human beings have pretty much been, you know, winging it. And it shows, right? It shows. Oh, yeah, we always talk about the good old days. I don't know. Were there ever any good old days? I look back and at the times when people talk about the good old days, and when you really start to peel off layers of the onion of those good old days, they weren't really all that good. There may have been some moments and some temporary periods of peace and prosperity and whatever it would, and whatever it takes to be fulfilling for a time to live in, but really, it isn't. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, folks, but there really were never any good old days. There were moments within the times that were great, were amazing, were revolutionary, were historic, certainly. But on a day-to-day basis, there really wasn't a lot of good old days. You can say, oh, well, you know, we won the war. Right? Like, say, World War II. Well, those were the good old days. But, you know, we also dropped a devastating bomb in order to win that war. And I'm not debating that decision. It was most likely the right decision, given the consequences and what was happening at the time. But it also opened up a whole new can of worms for us to worry about. It certainly helped win the war. It did end the war, not win it, but end it, which is good, because who needs long wars? Who needs people's lives destroyed? You know, so you could say, well, those were the good old days. Yeah, but it also ushered in the nuclear age, right? You say, well, the 50s were pretty cool. Yeah, they were, I guess. They were prosperous for many people, but they were also very dangerous for others. You see the film that's out now, The Green Book. It wasn't a very 50s and 60s were not a great time for African Americans or minorities in this country in terms of almost institutionalized and legalized segregation. So good old days? I don't know. Oh, come on. The 60s were cool, man. We had the Beatles. We had Woodstock. Yeah, we also had Vietnam hovering over all that, all of those good vibes, right? Well, the 70s were cool, weren't they? I mean, we had disco and all that cool stuff and new age stuff and yoga. Oh, yeah, it was great. Yeah, we had high inflation and Watergate and Iran taking our hostages. Come on. Oh, but come on, the 80s were great, right? I mean, the 80s. We love the 80s, MTV. And there was yuppies. We had there was a great financial windfall. Well, in the 80s, we did have a major. And we got rid of communism. Well, okay, but Russia is still our enemy, 25 years later. And in the 80s, for all the prosperity we had, it probably lasted for about 2.5 years, from, say, 84 to 87, 2.5, 3 years, because then the stock market crashed. And then we had Iran-Contra. Sorry, folks, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but I'm just trying to say let's not get too crazy about the good old days. There have been good moments. And you say, where the heck are you going with this, Jim? You're going to find, as I say, if you listen to me regularly, you will hear me go off on these tangents, but they are not tangents. I do make my way. As I think the Four Tops said, I'm working my way back. And I always find a way back to my original point, which is it's hard to stay away from politics sometimes, right? And we look for some diversions to keep us away from the politics and the craziness of everyday life. But then you realize that you can't get away from it. Even in what you would think is a harmless, mindless, and enjoyable diversion, as much as it should be. And here's what I mean. So, a few weeks ago, I'm watching the Westminster Kennel show, the dog show. And if you've never seen it, it's a venerable competition. Goes back, I think, almost 150 years with dog trainers and the best in show. It actually bred, no pun intended, one of the best comedies in the last 20 years, Christopher Guest's Best in Show parody mockumentary, which remains one of the best movies, like I said, in the last 25 years. But it is also a great diversion. If you're a dog lover, you got to love it. There's like 280 breeds of dogs. It's on television for 2 nights. It is a canine fest, right? Doggy palooza, if you will. And, you get to see all these different kinds of dogs, and they're all, manicured and pampered. And it really is, and I'm not even a dog owner. I like dogs, but we have a cat. We've had two cats, and I had even a cat when I was a little kid, Taffy the cat. We named the cat Taffy because we thought it was a girl. And then all of a sudden, many years later, my mom figured out it wasn't a girl. And so Taffy became Tuffy. So I've always had cats, but I certainly like dogs. Although my dad always had a great line. My dad wasn't a great lover of dogs, which is one reason why we didn't have one when I was a kid. Cats were less, time consuming, less of a responsibility. Cats can basically take care of themselves. Dogs need a lot of effort. And when you watch this dog show, they responsibly even say, because it's very easy to just watch this dog show over a couple of nights and be just mesmerized and just infatuated by the sight of some of these dogs and immediately say, oh, my gosh, I want one of those. I want one of those. And then they do a nice job of saying, this dog needs a lot of attention, or this dog needs a lot of training. So be careful. Don't be tempted by the looks of these dogs, because some of these dogs do take a lot of time, a lot of training, and just a lot of responsibility to be a good owner for them, and to take care of them correctly, and for you to enjoy them sharing your lives. So they do a nice job during the show to say, hey, put on the brakes, just so you know. Here's a good family dog, or here's a good apartment dog. Or here's one that, you know what, you're going to have to, you know, put a little time in with this one. But my dad always had a great line, especially when we would go over to people's homes to visit, and they would have dogs. And, you know, you walk in, you know, it's a stranger. Dogs get all excited when someone comes over or a new stranger enters the house, and they always, you know, are barking or they're jumping up, you know, for approval. I mean, most dogs are just looking for approval and connection. But, you know, if you're afraid of dogs or you're not that into them, you know, any kind of interaction is kind of off-putting or even threatening. You know, oh, this dog is jumping at me. You could view it that way. Or this dog is looking to connect with me. It depends on how you view that. My dad looked at it as either bothersome or an attack. And so the dogs, of course, would sense that and go right to him and bark and jump up. And he had a great line, which I do use today, even though I do like dogs. And I will, if I'm at someone's house, if they come by me, I will always pet them, and they do come back to me. So I don't share his either fear of dogs. I don't know what it was, but I do use this line anyway, because I've always enjoyed it. The dogs would, you know, inevitably the dogs would run up to him and bark or, you know, jump up at him, and the owner would say, "Oh, don't worry. You know, he doesn't bite. She doesn't bite." Because you could see my dad was a little apprehensive. And he would say, "He's got teeth, doesn't he?" Which, you know, it does make sense. But I still enjoy watching the Westminster dog show. And also, it's a nice midwinter diversion. You know, especially if you live here in the Midwest, in the Chicago area, you know, over the last month or so, we have been under a pretty steady climate of winter, of sometimes oppressive, record-setting, oppressive winter, low temperatures, blowing snow, ice, the whole thing. We're getting it all this winter. We started off very mildly, but it, as the winter has progressed through January and into February, it's been winter. It's been a regular winter, and even a little worse historically. But so this kennel show is always a nice little hibernation treat. You know, we're hunkered down here, you know, in the winter. It's not pleasant to go outside unless you have to, from a cold standpoint, from a safety standpoint, driving around. So for me, the Westminster Dog Show has always been a nice little diversion. And as I said, I like dogs, and so... And Westminster, the Westminster Kennel Club, of course. It's not a dog show. It's a Westminster Kennel Club show. You know, there is a little sense of, not only is there a sense of history, but there is a little sense of attitude. And, I mean, it's amazing how these dogs have attitude. I mean, we'd expect their handlers and the judges and those around it to be taken with themselves and taken with the spectacle and the competition. But you can really get a sense that the dogs get it as well. They've been pampered their whole lives. They've been cheered. They've been given treats. Even on that level, the dogs have attitude too, which is kind of interesting. And some of it, you really can see that some of these dogs don't just have, you know, kind of canine traits. They almost, I mean, maybe we project, but there's some that look really cocky. There's some that look aloof. There's some that look aggressive. There are some that look like they're show-offs. It's really funny. So, as I said, my wife and I enjoy to watch the 2 days of coverage of the Westminster Kennel Club show. It's on the big stage in New York, Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's got all the trappings. And, you know, it's just 2 days of a little, like I said, a little diversion, a little midwinter diversion. So this year, and it was funny because as much as it's become kind of a tradition, even fact, and we love our dog shows, we love our pets, we know that. I mean, come on. Would the internet have taken off as quickly as it had if not for, you know, piano playing cat and tail chasing dog, right? I mean, we love, if you go on the internet, that's all you see are animal related, you know, little snippets and clips and videos, right? That's what everybody shares. At least they used to before Trump, right? But so I've always enjoyed watching this. And so this year, I was surprised. As popular as it is, it always bumps, it always jumps around. It always used to be on the USA Network for a while. And so all of a sudden, a couple of days before, it's always around Valentine's Day. So I always know that. But all of a sudden it struck me. I mean, all of a sudden time just, you know, just keeps moving by. All of a sudden here we were in the middle of February. It just seemed like we had New Year's Eve. And I'm like, wait a minute, when is the Westminster? So I went on my program guide, and sure enough, I missed night one. I didn't see much publicity for it. It was wound up being on the Fox Sports Network, which was strange. I never expected it to be there. So I don't know why it keeps bopping around. I thought it was relatively popular. It seems like it. Even on New Year's Day, they have this kennel show right after the – don't they have a dog show? Right after the Thanksgiving Day, is it Thanksgiving Day parade? Maybe it's not New Year's. Maybe it's on Thanksgiving. Where they have a dog show with Peterman from Seinfeld. But that's not the official Westminster Club. It seems like it's a made for TV dog show. But we love our dogs. We love our animals. That's my point. So I was watching this year's 2019 Westminster Kennel Club show. Thankfully, they rerun the earlier night that I missed, so I DVR'd that, and then we watched that, and then we watched the finals. And so it was fun. Over the years, I have come to my favorite dog. If I had to get a dog, I would get a Pembroke Corgi. And if you don't know what that dog looks like, just go on the internet and Google Queen Elizabeth. She used to have the Pembroke Corgis. She used to have many Corgis. She used to breed them. And now, given her advanced age, she made the decision that, you know, she's no longer going to breed them. What I like about the Queen? She has always just been very practical. She's very real. I like reality-based people. I like people that, yes, nobody's a bigger dreamer than I am, but you also need to ground some of that with reality. And I've always been impressed by Queen Elizabeth. And so she's, you know, in her 90s, 91, 92 years old, and she said, look, I know that everybody in our family here is not crazy about these corgis. I love them, but I know that everyone else doesn't. And so, you know, I may be gone soon, and I don't want these dogs to be, neglected or ignored or mistreated. So we'll keep what we have, and when they pass away, they will be gone. I'm not going to burden people with these dogs just because I like them. When I'm not here, it's not fair to have these dogs around when the people that are carrying on don't have the same affection for them that I do. I love that. Thank you, Queen. Thank you, QE. Liz, if you will. But so that's my favorite dog. I love it. It's just kind of a cool looking dog. And so that would be my choice. And every year I hope for the Pembroke Corgi to win best of show. And it never does. And I don't know. And this is what I'm getting at here, folks. Believe me, just take the trip with me. Just let me guide you. Take me by the hand. I will guide you. I will take you where I'm going. Fear not. So I'm watching the new, you know, the 2019 Westminster Kennel Show. And so they're all excited because there's some new breeds were introduced. And, you know, if you don't know how it works, they have the dogs set up into different breeds and different groups. There's like the toy group, which are those smaller dogs, and hunting dogs and sporting dogs and herding dogs, you know, and things like that. And then the best. So we have different breeds within those groups, and there are judges. And of course, you know, any kind of judging is subjective, which is what I'm getting to. And so, but that's how it works. So there are different groups. There are breeds within the groups, and one dog is chosen, the best of each group. And there are six or seven groups. And then those seven dogs compete for the best in show. And then one, so you have one dog representing each of the seven groups, and then one is named best in show. And you need to understand, because everybody thinks that the dogs compete against each other, and certainly they do, but in the judging, from the way I have been, the way I understand it, the judges are not judging each dog against the other, whether it's within the group themselves or for the best in show. They judge the dog based upon the attributes of the breed. So the goal is to get the best representative of this breed. Not necessarily the best dog among all the others, but the best dog amongst the best representation of a dog of its breed among the seven breeds. Does that make sense? So yes, they certainly are competing, but the competition is not one against seven. It's the dog against the attributes of its breed and how well it meets those. So you could have a great Cocker Spaniel, and it's and you say, well, geez, that dog doesn't look better than this Lab or this Boxer when it's compared, when the two dogs are compared. But that's not what they're comparing. They're comparing the dog within their group, not amongst the other groups, within its breed, within its group. So you'd say, well, then that's pretty, I mean, that's pretty fair too, right? Okay. So every year, you know, I mean, obviously through time, as I said, anytime there's, you know, it's human, and I've said this many times, as you know, technology, anything else, always works well until the human element is brought into it. And so it's no surprise that even though that you would think that this is as fair of a judged contest as possible, through the years, no doubt, there have been some dogs that, or breeds, that have dominated this show. And for instance, the Scottish Terrier, the Wire Fox Terrier has won like 14 times out of, you know, 144 shows, which is like the most. And there's a Scottish Terrier. There seems to be a bias toward Terriers. And here's where I'm getting. So this year, when we go into the best of show, the last seven, there's some great excitement because almost half of the breeds that are in best of show have never won before. They've never won before. So people are hoping for history to be made, you know, at this dog show. The judge. They always have a judge. It's usually somebody that has been around the dog breeding and dog show world for many years. And there was this guy named, I think, Peter Green. He was a former handler. His dogs have won best of show. And he's an elderly gentleman, but he, you know, could see that he knows his stuff. They interviewed him before, and they were saying, so what are you going to be looking for here? Here we are. There's great excitement. And it's amazing. I mean, Madison Square Garden holds about 20,000 or so, and it's full. This is a popular thing, and people are reacting. The dogs run around, and, you know, they examine them. Sometimes some of these judges get a little too close, I think, touching the nether regions of some of these dogs. But, hey, that's the way you have to do it if you're trying to see the best of the breed, right? But this is a big deal. I mean, 20,000 people, everybody's screaming. Everybody has their favorites. America loves competition, or at least it used to. I don't know about these days, but this is still a time when everybody doesn't get a trophy, right? For those of you who still enjoy competition, there's still something, there's still some fragments of our old competitive spirit, which seems to be bred out, is being bred out of us slowly here. But there's still some remnants of competition, which has made this country what it is. But so here are the dogs, and they talk to the judge, and they say, what are you looking for? He says, well, you know, I mean, all these dogs, and they get to the finals here, the best in show, they are all, obviously, great examples of their breed. So it really, and this is what he says, it really comes down to which dog wants it more. Wow. I mean, doesn't that sound like what a coach would say in the Super Bowl? So here's this guy basically putting attributes on these dogs. As I said, they seem to have these personalities much like humans. And he says it's the dog that wants it more. As I said, you can see when the dogs are being paraded around or shown, as it's called, they do. Some are, you could see, are reacting to the crowd and reacting to the cheers and strutting their stuff. And so supposedly you've got, you know, six or this year there was some controversy. There's usually seven. One dog was ruled ineligible because its owner had worked in the past many years ago with this judge. And so to remove all questions of impropriety, that dog was deemed ineligible. And that was one of the dogs, the breed, that had never won before. So people were very disappointed and kind of baffled by that because it happened at the last second. But anyway, so he says it's which dog wants it more. Okay. That adds a little more suspense and drama, right? And the final six dogs come out and they are strutting their stuff and the crowd is reacting to them. And so everybody is very excited. Here we are. We've been waiting 2 days for this. The buildup is there. And there's two dogs especially that are really popular with the crowd. One was a long-haired Dachshund named Burns. And another one was a Sussex Spaniel called Bean. And there's actually a third one, Bono. Was his name, and I can't I don't know how to pronounce it. Havanese, I think is the name of the type of dog that Bono was. But definitely, Burns and Bean were the crowd favorites, and I'll tell you, I loved Bean. Bean was cool looking, and he. But Burns was out to win this thing. I mean, this dog was strutting its stuff. It was out there playing to the crowd. And it certainly, to me, fit the bill of the dog that wants it most. This dog knew it was on parade, knew it was being judged, and was reacting, and it was really cool to see it. And I was like, I gotta, you know, I'd love to see Bean win, because it's just a cool looking dog and had seemed to have a really neat kind of personality. But wow, talk about a confident little dog. That long haired Dachshund, Burns, really looks like he is head and shoulders above. And we saw the judge before the thing say, you know, all these dogs are great specimens, so it really comes down to the one that wants it the most. Well, one of the dogs of the six was a, as I said before, a wire terrier, a wire fox terrier. And while the judging was going on, one of the commentators just kind of casually mentioned that this judge, Peter Green, used to breed or work with or handle fox wire terriers. And it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. Does this judge have a bias? And even the commentator said, but you know, that could be, you might think that may be something that could help King, which was the name of the Foxwire Terrier in the best, in the final six things. But at the same time, you know, the judge may also be more tough because he knows what a perfect Foxwire Terrier is. And so he might actually have a higher standard by which this dog King would have to meet, because you know he'll be tough on the Foxwire Terrier, because you know this was his expertise. But that bothered me for a second. But you know, it was said casually, and when you saw Burns and when you saw Bean, you said, and especially the crowd reacting, it was clear it was a two dog race, maybe a third one with Bono the Havanese, but in my eyes it was a two dog race. It was Burns versus Bean. And you know, this Foxwire Terrier was a nice looking dog, and you know, he ran, I mean, you could see it was very well, it's won awards all around the world. There's no question about its pedigree and it being a top dog in terms of its breed. There's no question about that. But when you also look at some of the other intangibles that came in, that these other dogs were, as this judge said, they were all perfect representations of their breed. And it was who wanted it. And I'll be honest, King looked very aloof. King looked like another day at the office. So I did not really put any of my attention on King all that much, even though there was this possible thing with the judge that he liked, you know, fox terriers. I'm like, it's got to be Burns or Bean. So they have a runner-up, and then they have the winner. So they first give the reserve best in show, they call it. Surprise, surprise, to the Havanese, to Bono. Okay, which now, once again, sets the stage for Burns versus Bean. So I'm still going, it's Burns versus Bean, now even more so. The other favorite has now been told where he's in second place. And we're maybe looking at history here, right? These other dogs have never won. So all the stage is set. It's Bean versus Burns. There's no question. And this judge, Peter Green, suddenly, you know, comes back and he signs the book and they walk out with the big ribbon and the two other guys are next to him with the trophies. And he once again says, these are all great dogs. Thank you for showing them to me. And then he just kind of points quickly and goes, but you're best in show. And he points to the Foxwire Terrier. the terrier, the group of dogs that he has a history with, which he has an affinity for, obviously, which he has a bias for. And you could feel, I wasn't even in the room. I can imagine what it felt like in the room. My wife and I were screaming, here in our hibernated home, watching this for, the last day and a half. But you could feel all the energy and all the air get sucked out of the room when it wasn't Burns or Bean. It was this Foxwire Terrier, which, and terriers, as I said, have dominated this show for years. Here you have a judge who has a history with these dogs, and he picks the dog that he likes. And I said, wow, talk about Chicago politics at work. I immediately flashed upon Chicago politics. And I'm like, my gosh, even in the Westminster Kennel Club show, we've got cronyism and nepotism and bias and business as usual. With that choice, and I'm not denying that dog, was a fine specimen of his breed. But this guy said it's the dog that wants it most. And if you watch, just go online and watch the final 15 minutes, and you're going to tell me that King wanted it more than Burns or Bean? No way. But clearly, I think this guy said in his mind, yeah, they're nice. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, it's the people like it, but you know what? I'm picking the terrier because I know what a terrier is, and that's a good terrier. Totally let, if there is nepotism, if there is cronyism, if there is bias, if there is business as usual, the 2019 Westminster Kennel Club show was the Chicago way. We're sitting here right now in the midst, in a couple of, in a week or so, Chicago is going to vote for a new mayor. This current mayor, mayoral election is clouded in a huge scandal concerning a 4 or 5 decade old power broker alderman who was snagged by and indicted by the FBI for, corruption. We always hear about reform and we want to get rid of corruption. And especially here in Chicago, it is so ingrained. And I've lived in Chicago, born and raised in Chicago, live in the area my entire life. And sadly, we have come numb and ingrained in this culture of corruption that at times we don't even realize how bad it is. And when we are outraged when something like this happens, we've had judges who fix cases, who let murderers go. We've had corrupt aldermen. We've had corrupt mayors. We've had in the state, we've had corrupt governors who have gone to jail. And we take this all in stride. And it's really a shame. It's one reason why Chicago, one of the great cities of the world, is not anymore. And this state, Illinois, which was always a very popular and robust state, is in horrible financial trouble. And Chicago as a city, one of the great cities, at one time the second largest city, now it's the third. And there are people leaving the city in droves because it's just the decades long corruption in this city is starting to take its toll, and it's showing. Our roads are falling apart. Corruption is continuing. We'll see what happens in this mayoral campaign. We have a daily. The dailies have run this city for most of the last half century, and another daily has a chance to become mayor again, which is crazy. Everywhere the country in the last presidential election said no more dynasties, no more Clintons, no more Bushes. The country got it. But here we are in Chicago. Bill Daley, one of the leading candidates right now, after his brother Rich just left a few years ago and left the city in horrible shape after his 20 years. And we could debate his father's legacy in terms of what it really did to this city. Not just the fact that he was a national power broker and got elected all the time. But here I'm watching the Kennel show, and I'm saying, oh, my God, there it is. There's the nepotism. There's the cronyism. There's the business as usual. Terriers dominated again. There's a guy who has a terrier background, and he picks the terrier, and you know what? He wasn't even embarrassed about it. That's the worst part of corruption. When you see these people that are the heads of all this corruption, and they know they're doing it, and they don't care. He wasn't even embarrassed. There was no question that the popularity in that room, and if you were watching that Kennel show, it was Burns and Bean. King was not, he was a good dog, but he didn't deserve it. And nepotism, cronyism, business as usual, bias. And I said, wow. As Sean Connery said in The Untouchables, that's the Chicago way. And that's what I saw the other night in Madison Square Garden. In a dog show. In a dog show. So yes, I will watch it again next year. But I'll tell you, this one is going to hurt. I didn't have any dogs in the race at the beginning. None at all. But after 2 days, I could tell who should have won that. And it wasn't King. And the crowd knew it. And even the judge knew it, but he didn't care. So shame on you. And they better, like all of our... I talked about the NFL last time. Next year, they better make sure they get a judge who doesn't let his own bias shade his judgment. I'm not saying that you're supposed to go with the crowd. That's not right either. I'm not saying that. But this judge set his own criteria. The dog that wants it most. Please, if you don't believe me, go online and watch the last 10 minutes of that. And you tell me, of those six dogs, which one wanted it most. You tell me. It was a dog day afternoon in New York. Bean and Burns, you got robbed. And now we take a stroll to the Pop Culture Club section of the podcast. And we welcome our regular contributor, Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily. So, it is, this is the last podcast before the Oscars.
Okay.
And so I thought...
It's our favorite. It's our Super Bowl.
I guess it is. It used to be, but I don't know. I mean, now it's just... I don't know. I mean...
What is happening?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I'm just... Everything is just... I watched the Grammys a couple of weeks ago. Oh.
You just don't watch the Grammys.
I mean, do they give awards on that show?
Well, apparently they do.
I don't know.
And then when Cardi B wins one...
Most of them are off camera.
get ready, because that's about to happen with the...
Oh, I know, too. But I mean,
no,
this...
So at the... Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, yeah, I lay down my arms. I do not pretend to know 99.9% of the Oscar or the Grammy nominees, and that 0.1%, I don't care.
Right. This is why I can't believe you watched.
I didn't watch. I mean, I clicked back and forth, and you know, there's, but don't forget. I mean, I'm a music guy, and so it is difficult for me to A, not be interested in music like that, and you know, in the big events of the music world. And there is a part of me that is sad that I don't know or care to know about today's music. And I know I sound like I'm 100 years old, but I just,
it's don't not have to explain it to me.
Yeah. It's not music. It's all cockeyed. The whole thing. I blame Napster. Thank you very much. Napster started this whole thing. What was that guy's name? Sean? What's his name?
Oh God!
You know, Justin Timberlake played him in.
What was his name?
Social Networks. Sean Hayes, I think. Is that his name?
Was it?
I don't know what his name is. Sean something. No, Sean Hayes is an actor. Sean Hayes is in. It's in Will and Grace.
He's just dead.
Isn't it Sean Lennon?
Yeah.
Sean Parker. Yeah.
Sean Parker.
Yeah, yeah. I blame Napster. That's you can it all traces back to Napster.
Tracks. Yeah. Well, you know, I feel your pain because, as you know, I am a big fan of music as well. I mean, I spent my entire week last week was like filled with anxiety over trying to get Vampire Weekend tickets.
Oh, really?
I've been waiting for 6 years.
Wow.
To go on tour.
Honest to God, and you're that big of a...
Okay, first of all, there are... I love Vampire Weekend. They're
wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. First of all, there are so many pre-sales these days. So there's like a pre-sale for everything. You can get a code, you know...
You get the code. Oh, believe me,
The pre-sales are on different days. Then if you have certain credit cards, like if you have Citibank, which I
have... Oh, yeah, no, I've benefited from that.
Right. If you have a Chase card, you know, these
American Express.
I had so many options for pre-sales last week. I screwed up every single one of them.
Really? Where are they?
Mostly because they're playing. Oh, you know where they're playing here? At the Moody Theater.
Oh, nice.
Which is in downtown Austin. And that is where they film if you ever watched Austin City Limits Live on PBS, that's where all of those concerts take place.
Oh, okay.
So it's also a great venue logistically. And that's why that's the venue for that. But they're going to be there. They're going to be there for two nights in August. There's actually the week of my birthday. So I was nice little way to celebrate my birthday.
Yeah.
Right. And, but here's the thing, like in that venue, I mean, there's general admission, which is at this particular show. Sometimes they have seats.
Right. Yeah. They take the rows out for the,
for
all the bad 90s, all the bad 90s mosh pit bands.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like a pit. Yeah. And then you have the mezz area, which is like one level up and you have seats there, but it's still an amazing view.
Right.
And then even one step up in the balcony, that's not bad. I've sat up there before, but it's not what I wanted for this. But I didn't want general admission either, mostly because, as you know, I am somewhat petite in stature. And lately, I feel like I'm always stuck. I went to see Liz Phair a couple months ago. Honestly, I was there like an hour before the show. I was standing where I wanted to be. You know, I didn't need to be up front, but I was, you know, close enough. I was close to the bar. I was standing next to this pillar, so you get a little buffer.
Like,
as soon as Liz Phair goes on stage, the tallest guy in the entire place comes over and plants himself right in front of me. I mean, I was just like, what? I couldn't see anything. It was crazy. So I decided for this particular show that I was going to, I'm aiming for the mezz. For the mezzanine level, right? Because I know those seats are great.
Right.
And, you know, whatever. I'm like, I'm middle-aged. It's time for me to get out of the mosh pit. You know? So I failed. So the first thing I did was, in the first pre-sale, the only tickets I could get were general admission. So I just panicked and bought two because I'm like, I need to be in the venue. But as the week goes on, literally every day there was a different pre-sale. I'm logging on. I'm screwing up left and right. I can't get anything but like general admission. And so finally I'm like, and I'm not kidding you, anxiety all week. all week about this.
Jesus.
Friday is
first world problems right here, folks. First world problems.
I know. This is terrible. And then Friday comes along, and this is the regular sale, you know.
Right. And you get right through.
General public.
No problem.
Of course, I'm like sitting there with like the stopwatch waiting for the clock to turn 10 a.m.
Right.
And I get two Mez tickets. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? They were expensive. I mean, they were, four times what I paid for the general admission. Right. And I'm like panicking. And the clock is ticking because you have like 9 minutes to check out. And I'm like, what do I do? I'm texting my husband. I'm like, I don't know. He's like, go for it. Just do it. Just buy them. With 2 minutes to go, I suddenly realize, one, I'm middle-aged. Two, it's my birthday. And you know what? If I'm going to splurge on anything, it should be this for my birthday. I've been waiting for this for six years. Three, this is ridiculous because this concert's going to be sold out.
Right.
So
what are you doing?
Why am I worried? I can always, if I decide I don't want to spend this much on the seats, I'll sell them. If I could sell my general admission seats for probably a lot more than what I paid for them if I choose to do that.
Right.
You know, if I want, I would never usually try to make money if I were selling a concert ticket. Right. But anyway. But I'm like, why haven't I figured out, and in like 25 years of going to concerts, how have I not cracked this yet?
I know, exactly.
But in those 2 minutes, it was like an epiphany, and I got the seat, and I have never been happier. Like, I was so excited about it.
Right.
But, you know, and then of course, like the next day, I get a thing, an alert in my, you know, my one of my social media feeds. Beck's coming to town. I'm like, God, here we go. I'm going to spend another week anxiety ridden trying to get the best seats for Beck. But anyway, my point is, this is how much I really enjoy music, but I don't even watch the Grammys anymore because it's a mess.
You know, it is a mess. They're just, it's all, I mean, I clicked by and I saw Dolly Parton, and I'm not even a big Dolly Parton fan. By any means, but well, I mean, I appreciate her career and her music, and there's some songs that I like. I'm not some Dolly head, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, once again, they love to match up, you know, legends with current people, so that, you know, they will, you know, the people won't turn the television off, because the only people watching this show are young people. There's nobody over the age of 40 that's watching this anymore. Clearly, it can't be. Can't, unless you're a poser and you want to act like you're cool. Because there's nothing there for you. It's not aimed at you at all. And so, so they bring out Katy Perry with her, and Miley Cyrus and some other singer, and Kelly Musgraves. And, you know, these are the big divas of the day, correct? I mean, right?
Yeah, right.
And
we're only missing Lady Gaga.
Yeah, and and they could not have been more outclassed, because Dolly came out, you know.
Yeah, right.
And Katy Perry clearly needs 50 backup singers and auto tune. She cannot sing at all.
Right.
You know, she's chewing all those big, you know, Eye of the Tiger, big kind of, and it's not working on Jolene or whatever song she was singing.
Yeah.
Miley Cyrus, they were all off. They were off key.
Okay, in fairness to Miley Cyrus, though, I believe that Dolly Parton is her godmother.
Oh, is she?
I want to say she is, yeah.
Well, regardless, so, it doesn't matter. I'm saying is, like, Kelly Musgraves, who's the big deal of the moment, and she won the big award. They all just were, I mean, maybe they were nervous.
Right.
But you know what? I'm sorry, but you can't be nervous. That's part of being a performer.
Right.
You know, that's part of what goes into it. I don't care if you were nervous. If you're a pro, you're not nervous. And once again, they just clearly showed how most of today's, and once again, I sound like I'm 100 and I don't care, because it's true. Most of these people do not have the performance chops. They were created in studios with auto-tune and everything else. And when they are out on a stage, I mean, Jennifer Lopez, did this horrendous Motown tribute.
I read a lot about
it. Was
that.
So bad.
Very upset about it.
Well, regardless of her not being African American, taking politics aside, the performance was horrible.
Well, it just seems like an odd fit to.
Well, she can't sing. She's not a singer. She was a dancer on In Living Color. That's what she is.
Right.
And she's got a big butt. That's it.
Well, she did parlay it into quite a...
No question. More power to her.
Her breakthrough was playing Selena. So if anything, you would say she was more of an actor.
Well, that's what and you know, this Jenny on the Block BS and all that stuff, it was all created in the studio. Once again, she's another one of these 800 background singers. Cardi B, I don't know what the hell that was.
By the way, even worse, do you know that Cardi B... Like the day after the Grammys, because she was getting lots of people sending her congratulations and stuff. She went on Twitter or Instagram or something and posted saying thank you probably had a picture of the arrangement of flowers. Thank you, Tom Petty, for the beautiful flowers.
She doesn't even know. She doesn't know that he. First of all, she doesn't know who he is. Well, the best part was you know they're in L.A. They're in the Staples Center. And, so everybody is way too cool for the room. And so they do this Motown tribute. And, first of all they basically did for this, they jammed together all these songs. And all they did was sing one line of the chorus.
Yeah.
I mean, she puts a hat on and she goes, Papa was a rolling stone. Right. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. Done.
Yeah.
That's done. And now we go into... Working My Way Back to You. And I mean, then they hauled out Smokey Robinson. He sang one line and they pushed him off.
Yeah, I feel Motown deserves better than that.
Oh, it was horrible. But my point is that, this is what it is now. Okay, fine. But my point is when you see what was passing for excellence is really sad. Like I said, when you saw this, Dolly Parton had more charisma, more stage presence at 70, whatever she is. And that's the problem. Yeah. You see these people and they are studio creations. They don't know how to, and it doesn't take much now for everybody just to woo. Everybody's excited. But as I said, our standard for what really is good, I mean, once again, not to bring everything back to Elton John, but if you're going to talk about nerves, okay, well, how about singing to a billion people at Lady Di's funeral?
Yeah.
Okay, well, do you think he was nervous? Yeah.
Sad. He was probably very sad, too.
Well, yeah, he knew her, so he was nervous and he was sad, and he nailed it. That's a pro. That's what a pro does. You, regardless of if you're nervous, if you're a pro, you go out on stage and you perform. Then if you can't do that, you're not a pro. So I don't even know how we got on the subject of that. But, I know how. Once again, we diverged. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love for the Oscars to be the Super Bowl, but I don't even know if they can be anymore because of all the craziness is surrounding it between, the hosting thing. And Oscars are too white, # too white, all this other BS over the last several years. It's like, you know what?
Well,
excellence. But you know what? At the end of the day, excellence is excellence. And I understand there's biases in anything, as I've said many times. The people. Anytime you put the human element in, it's going to be imperfect. That's the point. But now the Oscars have become the first thing they're worried about is offending anybody. And the second thing they're worried about is the award. And that's not the way it should be. And you know what's going to be funny is what I want to do for our Oscar predictions is not go over all the possible winners. Everybody else will do that. What I want to do is... get your choice for the biggest long shot that you think, regardless even if you like the movie or like the person or not, but wow, wouldn't this be a long shot win where you can look like a genius? And if you don't get it, it doesn't matter because it was a long shot anyway.
Right.
And so just after this little tirade that I gave you about all these different hashtags, you're going to be surprised at what my long shot pick is going to be.
Oh, okay.
But I will ask you yours first. So of all the nominees, what one winner, movie or person, whatever, are you choosing to be, this person probably is not going to win, doesn't have a chance to win, but wouldn't it be cool if they did? Or wouldn't it be something if they did? Not even cool. Wouldn't it be something if they did? What would, which one falls into that category for you?
Ah, this is so hard because actually when we started the awards season, the people who I thought were front runners and the films that I thought were like, you know,
right,
just locked down, I feel that that's totally flipped in the last.
Oh, totally.
Months,
yeah.
Since we first started talking about this and everyone started, you know, rolling out the red carpets on the various shows. I mean, I'm scrolling through this list here, and actually I have to point out there was a movie on here that I was like, that is a great name for a movie. I don't know anything about it.
What, Roma?
I have no, not Roma. this is like in the documentary category, okay. I think. Where is it? It's
Green Book?
Oh, I just had it here. Now I lost it. Okay.
Won't you be my neighbor?
That was like years ago. And I don't even think it won, but it probably should have. No, best documentary short subject. I just have to point this out. There's a film called Period. End of sentence. I don't know anything about this film, but it kind of makes me want to see it. That could really be about anything. And what a great name for a title for a film. Okay. Well, I don't know. This is so tough because I feel like there are so many possibilities here. I mean, I almost want to say, oh, boy. Well, I mean, like, for example, I have questions. I have a question.
Oh, my God.
For example, if I were to say to you, I think that my long shot is going to be Black Panther for best film.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to turn around and say to me, that's not a long shot?
No. Oh, I would. No, I think that's because as much as, to your point, I would say 6 months ago, that was the odds-on favorite. Because everybody were saying, oh, it's about time that a big blockbuster got nominated. And, of course, it's African-American, based and everything. So it plays into a historical thing, and it plays into this more inclusive diversity that the Oscars are looking for. So it plays into all that. And then as time went on, it sort of fell from that kind of it's a lock. But then it won the Screen Actors Guild. And so that certainly propped it up again. So I don't know. That certainly, I mean, it has a lot going for it. And at the same time, it also has seemed to have dropped a little in the buzz factor. As I've said, you know, most of it nowadays, and I've done this for many years, you don't even have to see all the films and you can still predict all the winners.
Right.
So I would say that Black Panther is certainly not a crazy long shot, but it's certainly not the favorite anymore.
So, I mean, I was definitely trying to choose between that, and this is where I hedge my genius, and saying that Christian Bale could win for Vice, even though Rami Malek has been winning every single award. So, but I ultimately am going to go with my long shot is Black Panther for Best
Picture. All right. Well, you know what's interesting? We both have chosen movies with the word black in the title.
Oh, okay.
Because I, even though I said that, you know, quality is quality and don't worry about all these other social issues, give out an award that if a movie is directed by a white person or a man and it's a great movie, that shouldn't be a detriment. But it seems like it is today.
Well, sorry. Time's up, pal.
Yeah, time's up. Me too. Hashtag.
Time's up on you and your little.
Yeah, your whole generation. Yeah. But, and yet, if I sound like I'm Archie Bunker or if I sound like I'm stuck in the 1940s, my choice is Black Klansman.
Wow. Okay. That is a bold choice.
I
not because I don't think it's a good movie and deserving. I mean, you know, Spike Lee has made a ton of really amazing films. But I would say of every film in this category over the course of the awards season, every one of them has won some awards. But I don't think I've seen Black Klansman win. They've been nominated for a lot.
Right. And
have they won anything?
The only thing it did win at the Cannes Film Festival last year. Oh, it did win like the Grand Prix Award, but that's not the highest honor. It's one of the honors. Okay. But you're right. It has been nominated. It was nominated for Golden Globes. It's been nominated in everything. It hasn't won. And the one reason why I'm wondering if there might not be a quiet, silent push for this, even though it hasn't won anything, and as I said, the whole idea of this is to be a long shot, is that there is a little irony behind the scenes. And this is what I'm saying about you have to be able to read the tea leaves. It's not always about the best movie. Sometimes it's about, you know, the palace intrigue on this. And I didn't even realize this until I recently saw a story about Spike Lee and the movie. When Do the Right Thing came out in 1989, it was not nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
The Best Picture that year, and that was a very controversial film. It really was one of the first kind of movies to talk about prejudice and really kind of a very realistic view of race relations in Brooklyn, white, you know, versus black and everything. It did not get a nomination for Best Picture, and the winner of that year was Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, right.
And so it was very kind of ironic in that you had this one movie that was pushing boundaries and asking some very relevant social questions of the day back in the late 80s, early 90s. And yet you had this movie that won that was very pedestrian with the black guy driving the white Southern woman around.
Right.
So here we are in 2019, right? 30 years later. Literally 30 years later, which is hard to believe, that Do the Right Thing was 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know. That's
and
bad.
Here's another.
Stop making me feel old.
Here's another Spike Lee film, like most of them, which, you know, touches on the boundaries and pushes the envelope and talks about race relations. And this is a very unique and true story about a policeman in Colorado who infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan via the telephone and then needed a white person to be him when he met David Duke, which is ironic from a historical standpoint, who was the Grand Wizard of the KKK. So a very interesting real-life story about race relations and the Ku Klux Klan. And one of the leading and possible favorites is another movie about a black and a white person driving in a car.
Right. Which, of course, is Green Book.
Which is Green Book. Now, Green certainly, Book. The tables have turned. The white person now is driving the black person. But it's still a period piece about a white person and a black person driving in a car. So it's just kind of interesting how Spike Lee again...
Yeah.
You know, is in this thing. Now, this is the first time that one of his movies has been nominated for Best Picture.
Well, this is, I think, isn't this the first time he's been nominated for Best Director?
Yeah, and let's not forget, he made Malcolm X, and, you
know. But he has been nominated, I think he's been nominated before in, like, screenplay.
Yes. He has been nominated for screenplay.
He has been nominated for an Academy Award, just not.
Yeah, but not for Director and Best Picture. And he has actually won an honorary Oscar. Mm-hmm. One of those
but see,
ones.
Now this leads me to my question for you, which is, wouldn't your better long shot be to choose Spike Lee to win Best Director for Black Klansman?
Well, I'm saying, I guess.
He is not favored. I mean, look, the director of Roma, Alfonso, how do you say his name? Cuarón?
Yeah, Cuarón, I think.
Does that sound Cuarón?
Yeah.
That. You know, he's pretty much won, I think, every award. So I feel like for you, Spike Lee would definitely be the long.
Well, I would say, I mean, maybe I'm doing a hybrid here. I mean, Spike Lee is not favored.
Now you're hedging.
Well, Spike Lee, well, these are long shots. Spike Lee and his movie are not favored to win anything. So right. I think the fact that either if he won on his own or if the movie won on his own, the reason I say there could be some palace intrigue is that, you know, there could be a silent majority of saying, A, there's, you know, here's Spike Lee, who's been around now for 30 years. I have not seen this film, but it's, I mean, Adam Driver is nominated. So is Denzel Washington's son, who plays the lead.
Oh, really? I didn't even know he was in it.
Yeah, John David Washington is Denzel Washington's son.
Really? And so he plays the guy
who
infiltrates
KKK.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the trailers. And
no, that's Denzel Washington's son.
I had no idea that was his son.
So, yeah, so there's a lot going on there. But I'm just wondering, given the fact of where we are today in terms of, as I said, in Hollywood, many times it is politics and it is other, you know, other issues that lead to people winning as opposed to just being the best. Because what does that mean? Anytime, you know, any kind of judging is subjective. But yes, there you are exactly correct. In terms of previous winners and momentum, you know, this is a huge long shot. But in terms of who he is, where what the movie is about, you know, the Ku Klux Klan and race relations at the very end of the film, I understand there's some very obvious and blatant anti-Trump images, which certainly plays into Hollywood in today's world. Yeah. So between Spike Lee having never won, this interesting story on its own face of how the Ku Klux Klan got duped, you know, so they look like fools, which, given what's going on today with the governor of Virginia, the Ku Klux Klan and wearing white face or black face, whatever you want to call it, is very timely.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of little peripheral things floating around here that would make it the shock. And at the same time, I'm not a huge Spike Lee fan, per se. I've certainly enjoyed his movies. I don't go out of my way to see them. But at the same time, I can't, once again, I have to respect and give kudos to him as a filmmaker and doing the kind of films that he believes in and making. So I certainly have no problems with that. I had a little close encounter with him when Malcolm X came out. I was writing for a movie magazine, and so I went to an event that he was at here in Chicago on the South Side, and I literally was one of the only white people in the room.
All right. So did you get to were you able to interview him? Or
So I stood up and asked him a question, and it wasn't a fawning question. I can't remember the question. But it was kind of and, you know, he looked at me like, A, why are you here? And B, where do you come off? Even though it wasn't a controversial question, but it wasn't a softball question. It was about, I think it was something about Malcolm X's, you know, kind of, you know, dichotomy. He started out, you know, as kind of a, you know, he was a pimp and a drug guy, and then he turned into this leader. And so it may have been somewhere along those lines. And but he gave me a look like, A, why are you here? And how dare you ask me that? Which was fine with me because I was like, hey, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
To ask the question. So I had no problems with it. And I don't care if Spike Lee likes me or not. I'm and, you know, and nobody, you know, I wasn't attacked.
Right. Well, if you're reporting on
that. Yeah, at the event. But I certainly felt.
Did he give you like
a. Yeah, he did. I mean, he sort of answered the question. He didn't blow me off, but I could just tell that he kind of looked at me like, you know, are you here? Are you trying to, you know, to rustle things up? And I wasn't. I thought it was a legitimate question.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was sort of in his comfort zone. And so, you know, this was all about praising Malcolm X. And I was asking a question that wasn't necessarily denigrating him, but was just asking the reality of, hey, how do you reconcile these two sides? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah.
That's a totally fair question for.
Oh yeah, and like I said, that's why, and I had no problems asking it, even though it was a question that he didn't expect, because like I said, I think he was in an area that he thought he was just going to be, getting asked softball questions and people praising the film, and I certainly like the movie, but I also felt like it was a question that deserved to be asked. So my point is, I'm not a huge Spike Lee fan to say, oh my God, I mean, I'm waiting for Spike Lee to win an Oscar. No, I just think that there are, this is a movie that is interesting. The story is interesting on its face. It does have a message. And it is very in tune with what's going on right now. And here's a guy, whether, like I said, some may not like him because he yells at basketball games or, for whatever his attitude or his views or whatever you want to say. But you can't deny his, his contribution.
No, not at all.
So I don't know. I just think that it certainly goes against everything. Because there are so other movies that are certainly winning the other awards.
Yeah, so we'll see. Look, I hope that there are a few surprises. It used to be that you could always count on a couple of upsets at the very least, usually in the supporting.
But now you're not even getting those. You're not even getting those. Yeah, you're so right.
I feel like the last couple of Oscars has just been so predictable that it's like, it's just disappointing almost.
Yeah,
like,
that was that the best supporting actor and actress category was the that always historically for the last 20 years, if not more, was always the one that could be counted on to be, if there was a wild card, if there was one that went off the beaten path, it was that one, because those the other ones for best actor and best actress and movie or director, they always wanted to make sure that the right people, the ones deserving got it, as opposed
I mean, they had to let's face it, they had an upset that was so huge one year with Marissa Tomei winning for My Cousin Vinny.
Right.
There's a lot that there has been this whole myth around that she created that what's his name, Jack Palance, read the wrong name.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
Which I don't believe happened.
Of course not.
I mean, she won. I think she won. And to be honest, I think she
was good.
She was good in that movie.
Right.
She
there's
was
no
really
question.
Good. I don't remember who she was.
Yeah.
Who she?
Well, just because comedies rarely win, and and things like that. And she was purely and that wasn't a, that was a comedy, and it even wasn't even a highbrow comedy. It wasn't even a Woody Allen intellectual comedy. It was a very, kind of just basic, middle of the road, kind of brash comedy. So I think that's what surprised people. But we'll see what happens here, because as I said, where you're watching things move over the last couple of weeks, you saw Green Book, suddenly emerge, and then you saw it kind of fall, and then Black Panther wins the SAG Awards, which is a big thing. The Directors Awards are always a harbinger, and so I don't know where it's going, but if I had to pick a long shot, where now this is why I'm doing this, so when you're sitting at home and when our listeners are sitting at home and they say Best Director Spike Lee, what are you going to say?
I would say I told you so. You're going to think you're a genius because you hedged your bet.
Hedged my bets.
So,
or if it says Best Picture, Black Klansman, what are you going to say? Oh my God. He was right.
I am going to I might actually make an Oscar for you. I'll make a trophy.
Well, that's I have to say that.
Yours
actually, yours, while yours is still a long shot, given what's been going on, yours certainly does have, I would say, a good chance to come true.
Oh, well, we'll see.
Mine, I think,
is creating a new Oscar category.
Yeah, I like the Oscar. I don't, it's easy to sit there. Who's going to win? Everybody debates, and they wind up coming with the same thing. and blah, blah, blah. You can see that and hear that anywhere. So I like this idea of the crazy long shot. Now, I have to peel some layers back of the onion. When I first suggested this to Emily about a topic to talk about, she sent me an email, and I said, you know, here's what I'd like to do, so come up with your long shot. And she sent me back in the email just two words, Michael Shannon, exclamation point. So at first, I know that Michael Shannon, who's a great actor and from Chicago area here, is not nominated for anything this year. So I was a little initially kind of perplexed as to what she was saying. And then I know a couple years ago that he was nominated for an Academy Award and he didn't win. And so I thought she misunderstood my question or my challenge to say, no, it's not in the history of the Oscars which long shot. I mean this year.
Dummy.
You know, she's over there saying, I think Mary Pickford should have won.
However.
So then she reminded me that back in 2016, that was one of your, you actually did hope he won, even though it was a huge long shot.
Wait, that was one of my picks. Okay.
Yeah, and it was a ridiculous pick. Well, he didn't win. It was horrible
and
pick.
And I mean, when I told you that was my pick, you went on a rant that was so ridiculous.
Was I correct?
Well, to be fair to me, it was a supporting actor category. And so it wasn't really that outrageous. But anyways, you were right. He did not win.
Of course.
And do you remember this? And so that night, I had a missed call on my phone from you, and I was like, right. Oh god. And I had a voicemail and I listened to it and it just goes boop, Michael click. I think I saved it. I think I still have that voicemail on my phone because it made me laugh so hard. But what you didn't realize, so you're like, you totally missed the point, dummy. Right. But in fact, I was so on point.
Right.
Right?
No, yeah, totally. I had forgotten about that until you reminded me.
Right, because what would be, I mean, the who would be the biggest long shot I could think of? Someone who's not even nominated.
Right. Well, that would be a huge long shot.
But
a write-in.
Well, you know, you also, actually, I don't know if you remember this, if you cast your mind back, we also got into it over him because for some reason I had it in my head that he was like British.
Yeah.
And you were like, not only is he not British, but he is actually from your hometown.
Exactly. The Red Orchid
Theater. I don't know.
Theater.
I was way off base with Michael Shannon. What can I say?
Well, all I can tell you is that now that you reminded me, on Oscar night, when Black Panther loses, or when Black Klansman wins, you can expect another voicemail.
Believe me. I know. You know what? I'm putting my phone on do not disturb. You're not going to ruin my Oscar night by, you know, calling me to rub it in.
So but, we shall see.
I do have one prediction.
What's that?
That I think I'll be right on. There's no host this year. It's your dream come true.
Right.
So I suggested. So I predict that you will actually enjoy the Oscars this year.
Believe me. I have no question that this show is going to run smoothly. It's going to be, there are going to be less cringeworthy moments. There's going to be less moments when you're screaming at the screen saying, get on with this horrible bit and give out the awards.
Yeah.
Of which I do, believe me.
Do you know what would be kind of funny and kind of genius, though? As a joke, since they're not having a host this year, if they had the first two people to come out, if they had Anne Hathaway and
Rob Lowe
kick off the show,
right? Yeah.
And Rob Lowe, that would be great. All of their most horrendous like misses in Oscar history gathered on the stage.
Yeah, like yeah, have James Franco, Rob Lowe. No,
I don't think they could get Anne Hathaway to do it. I've heard her being interviewed recently, and I feel it may still be too soon.
Oh, I'm
for
sure
her.
That, yeah.
I think she's not over.
I think she'll be 90 and it'll be too soon for her. That was one of the biggest train wrecks, her and James Franco. Well, and like I said, it's going to be interesting. I'm sure there will be some ironic humor. I'm sure Billy Crystal will make an appearance somewhere, somehow, because he is so, you know, associated with hosting. And yeah, maybe they'll have Kevin Hart, you know,
with successful hosting.
Yeah, yeah, right. Or yeah, maybe they'll have Kevin Hart, you know, bound and gagged somewhere, or something. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, we will find out if our long shots are long shots or favorites. And as I said, Emily, expect a phone call on Oscar night.
Well, okay. I wish you the best of luck. May the best man win.
Very good. And we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And that wraps up another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, episode number 144. Thank you so much for downloading, for scrolling, for clicking on whatever it is that you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is appreciated. And don't forget, go on that landing page. You can find all previous episodes at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.